Must have dyed it with urine. Kagan stopped at yet another door and waited for it to open. I have no idea how he got the razor blade. He's in his cell 23 hours a day. His yard time is isolated. He's the only one in the cage. He doesn't have contact visits, and the guards are all terrified of him. The door opened, and he continued walking. If it was up to me, I'd leave him to rot in the hole, but it's not up to me. He'll be confined another week unless he pulls something awful, and believe me, he is capable of the awful. The warden stopped at a set of metal doors. The first one clanged open, and they went inside. The last time we locked him in the hole, the guard who sent him there was attacked the next day. We never found the responsible party, but the man lost one of his eyes. It was plucked out by hand. The door behind them shut, and the one in front of them banged open. Kagan said, "We'll have the cameras on you, Mr. Trent, but I have to warn you that our response time clocks in at 61 seconds, just over a minute. We can't get it any tighter than that. I have a full raid team suited up and on standby if anything happens." He patted Will on the back. "Good luck." There was a guard waiting to take Will through. The man looked filled with the kind of dread you'd see on a death row inmate's face. It was like staring into a mirror. Will turned to Amanda. He had broken his silence in the waiting room so that she could coach him on what to say to Roger Ling, but he just now realized she hadn't offered any advice. "You want to help me here?" She said, "Quid pro quo, Clarice. Don't come back without some useful information." Will remembered again that he hated her. The guard motioned him through. The door closed behind them. The man said, "Keep close to the walls. If you see something coming at you, cover your eyes and close your mouth. It's probably shit." Will tried to walk as if his testicles hadn't receded into his body. The lights were out in the cells, but the hall was well lit. The guard kept to the wall, away from the prisoners opposite. Will followed suit. He could feel a new set of eyes tracking him as he passed each cell. There was a skittering noise behind him as kites, tiny pieces of paper with strings attached to them, slid across the concrete floor in his wake. In his mind, Will listed out all the possible contraband in the cells. Shivs, made from toothbrushes and combs. Blades fashioned from pieces of metal lifted out of the kitchen. Feces and urine mixed in a cup to create gas bombs. Threads from a sheet braided into a whip with razor blades tied at the ends. Another set of double gates. The first one opened, they walked through. The first one closed. Seconds ticked by. The second set groaned open. They came to a solid door with a piece of glass at eye level. The guard took out a heavy ring of keys and found the right one. He stuck it into a lock on the wall. There was a ka-thunk as a bolt opened. He turned around and looked at the camera overhead. They both waited until there was a responding click from the guard watching them in a remote viewing room. The door slid open. Solitary confinement. The hole. The hallway was about 30 feet deep and 10 feet wide. 8 metal doors were on one side. A concrete block wall was on the other. The cells faced inside the prison, not out. There would be no windows, no fresh air, no sunlight, no hope. As Kagan had pointed out, these men had nothing but time. Unlike the rest of the prison, all of the overhead lights were on in solitary. The glow of fluorescent bulbs gave Will an instant headache. The hallway was warm and muggy. There was something like pressure in the air, a weighted, heavy feeling. He had the sensation of being in the middle of a field waiting for a tornado to hit. "He's in the last one," the guard said. He kept to the wall again, his shoulder rubbing against the concrete block. Will could see the paint had been rubbed off from years of guards sliding their shoulders across. The doors opposite were bolted up tight. Each had a viewing window at the top, narrow, eye level. like at a speakeasy. There was a slit at the bottom for passing meals and tightening handcuffs. All of the doors and panels were secured with heavy bolts and rivets. The guard stopped at the last door. He put his hand to Will's chest and made sure his back was flat against the wall.
I don't need to tell you to stay there, right, big guy?
Will shook his head. The man seemed to gather his courage before walking to the cell door. He wrapped his hand around the slide bolt that kept the viewing panel covered.
Mr. Ling, if I pull back this slat, are you going to give me any trouble?
There was the muffled sound of laughter behind the door. Roger Ling had the same heavy southern accent as his sister.
I think you're safe for now, Enrique.
The guard was sweating. He gripped the bolt and pulled back, stepping out of the way so quickly that his shoes squeaked across the floor. Will felt a bead of sweat roll down his neck. Roger Ling was obviously standing with his back pressed against the door. Will could see the side of his neck, the bottom of his ear, a hint of the orange prison garb that covered his shoulder. The lights were on inside, brighter than they were in the hallway. Will saw the rear of the cell, the edge of a mattress on the floor. The space was smaller than a normal cell, less than 8 feet deep, probably 4 feet wide. There would be a toilet, but nothing else. No chair, no table. Nothing to make you feel like a human being. The usual smells of a prison, sweat, urine, feces, were more pungent here. Will realized there was no screaming. Normally, a prison was as noisy as an elementary school, especially at night. The kites had done their job. The whole place had ground to a stop because Roger Ling had a visitor. Will waited. He could hear his heart pumping, the sound of breath going in and out of his lungs. Ling asked, "How's Arnaldo doing?" Julia Ling's chihuahua. Will cleared his throat.
"He's fine." "Is she letting him get fat?"
"I told her not to let him get fat."
"He seems..." Will struggled for an answer. "She's not letting him starve."
"Naldo's a cool little dude," Ling said. "I always say a chihuahua is only as high-strung as his owner. You agree with that?"
Will hadn't given it much thought, but he said,
"I guess that makes sense. Mine's pretty laid back."
"What's her name again?"
There was a point to this after all. Ling was confirming that he was talking to the right man.
"Betty."
He had passed the test.
"Good to meet you in person, Mr. Trent."
Ling shifted, and Will saw most of his neck, a tattoo of a dragon went up his vertebrae. The wings were spread across his shaved head, the eyes were bright yellow. Ling said,
"My sister's pretty freaked out."
"I can imagine."
"Those little shits tried to kill her."
His voice was hard, exactly the kind of tone you'd expect from a man who'd mutilated and killed two women.
"They wouldn't be acting so tough if I wasn't locked up in here. I'd be bringing them some pains in their brains. You feel me?"
Will looked at the guard. The man was tensed like a bulldog ready to fight. Or flee, which seemed the smarter option. Will thought about the raid team waiting and wondered what Roger Ling could do in 61 seconds.
A lot, probably.
Ling said,
"You know why I asked to speak with you?"
Will was honest.
"I have no idea."
"'Cause I don't trust nothing that bitch has to say."
Obviously, he meant Amanda. "That's probably smart."
He laughed. Will listened to the sound echoing through the cell. There was no joy in the noise. It was chilling, almost maniacal. Will wondered if Ling's victims had heard this laughter while they were being strangled to death with Arnaldo's leash. Ling said,
"We gotta end this. Too much blood on the street is bad for business."
"Tell me how to make that happen."
"I got word from Ignacio. He understands Yellow isn't behind this. He wants peace."
Will wasn't exactly a gang expert, but he doubted that the leader of Los Texicanos would turn the other cheek over his son being beaten and killed. He told Ling as much.
"I would assume Mr. Ortiz wants vengeance."
"No, man. No vengeance. Ricardo dug his own grave. Ignacio knows that. Make sure Faith knows that, too. She did what she had to do. Family is family, am I right?"
Will didn't like this man knowing Faith's name, and he sure as hell didn't trust his assurances. Still, he said, "I'll tell her." Ling echoed his sister's words.
"These young guys are crazy, man. Got no sense of the value of life. You bust your ass to make the world good for them. You give them brand new cars and send them to private schools, and the minute they're on their own, pow, they turn around and pop you one."
Will thought "pow" was a bit of an understatement, but he kept that thought to himself.
"Ricardo was at Westminster," Ling said. "You know that?"
Will was familiar with the private school, which cost upwards of $25,000 a year. He also knew from Hironobu Kwan's file that he'd attended Westminster on a math scholarship. So, another connection.
Ling said Ignacio thought he could buy his son a different life, but them spoiled rich kids got him hooked on oxy.
Was Ricardo in rehab?
Shit. Little dude lived in rehab.
He shifted again. Will could hear the material of his stiff orange shirt rub against the metal door.
"You got kids?"
"No."
"Not that you know of, right?"
He laughed, as if this was funny.
"I got three. Two ex-wives, always bitching at me for money. I give it to them, though. They keep my boys in line, don't let my daughter dress like no whore, keep their noses clean."
His shoulder raised in a shrug.
"What can you do, though? It's in the blood sometimes. No matter how many times you show them the right way, they get to a certain age and they get ideas into their heads. They think maybe they don't have to work their way up. They see what other people got and think they can just walk in and take it."
Ling seemed to know a lot about Ignacio Ortiz's parenting woes. Odd, especially considering the two were locked down in separate prisons that were almost an entire state away from each other. Boyd Spivey had been wrong. Yellow wasn't making a play for Brown. Yellow was working for Brown. Will said, "You have a business relationship with Mr. Ortiz."
"That's a fair statement."
Ignacio asked Julia to give his son a job on the legit side of the business.
"It's good for a young man to have a trade. And Ricardo took to it. He had an eye for the work. Most of them, they're just putting together boxes, slapping on doors. Ricky was different. He was smart. Knew how to get the right people on the job. Could have run his own shop one day."
Will started to understand.
"Ricardo got a crew together. Hironobu Kwan and the others worked at your sister's shop. Maybe they saw the money coming in from the less legitimate side of the business and thought that they deserved a bigger piece.
Ortiz would never approve of some upstart gang taking a piece of the Los Texicanos pie, even if it was his own son.
Starting a business is harder than it looks, especially with a franchise. You gotta pay the fees.
You heard about Ricardo's trip to Sweden.
Hell, everybody heard.
He chuckled, as if it was funny.
Problem with being that age is you don't know when to keep your mouth shut. Young, dumb, and full of cum.
Your people talked to Ricardo about his trip. Will didn't say that they were probably torturing the young man during the discussion. Ricardo mentioned that there might be a way to buy himself out of his problem. Will imagined Ricardo would have been willing to trade his own mother by the time they were finished torturing him. He had told you that he could get his hands on some money. A lot of money. Almost $1 million, cash.
That sounds like a deal no businessman can say no to.
Everything was lining up. Ricardo had taken his crew to Evelyn's, where they met with a hell of a lot more resistance than they'd anticipated. They had killed Hector. Even if Amanda was right and Hector Ortiz was just a car salesman, there was no getting around that he was Ignacio Ortiz's cousin. Ricardo took them to Evelyn's house to get the money. Only, they didn't count on her fighting back. They took too many casualties. They had to regroup, and then Faith rolled up. Ling asked,
"You heard this story before?"
Will kept talking. They took Evelyn somewhere else to question her.
"Sounds like a plan, man."
"Only, she hasn't given up the money. If she had, I wouldn't be here." He laughed.
"I don't know about that, brother. You seem to be missing something in your story."
"What do you mean?"
"Think about it."
Will was still at a loss.
"The only way you can kill a snake is to cut off its head."
"Okay." He still wasn't following.
"Far as I can tell, that old snake's still out there twitching."
"You mean Evelyn?"
"Shit. You think that old bitch could get a bunch of kids to follow her? Whore couldn't even keep her own house in order."
He tisked his tongue the same way his sister had.
"No, this is man's work, bro.
How do you think they got one over on my sister?
Bitches don't got the balls for this kind of work."
Will wasn't going to argue the point. Gangs were the ultimate boys' club. More patriarchal than the Catholic Church, Julia Ling had only been in charge at her brother's pleasure. Generals don't go into battle. They send their pawns to the front lines. Hironobu Kwan was shot within minutes of breaching the house. Ricardo Ortiz had been left behind. Benny Chu had held a gun to his head. The man had been beaten. He was abandoned. He was expendable. Someone else had tipped them off about Evelyn. Someone else was leading the gang. Will said, "Chuck Finn." Ling laughed as if the name surprised him.
"Chuckleberry Finn. I thought that brother would be dead by now.
Fish, sleeping with the fishes."
"Is he behind this?"
Roger didn't answer.
"An old sledge taken down, too. From what I hear, they did the brother a favor.
Go out like a man instead of waiting to be put down like a dog."
"Can't say some good ain't come out of this."
"Who's behind?"
"Yo, this is over."
Roger Ling banged on the cell door.
"Enrique, close it up."
The guard started to slide back the panel. Will reached out to stop him. Like a snake striking, Ling's hand snared out, clamping around Will's wrist. He pulled so hard that Will's shoulder slammed into the door. The side of his face was pressed against the cold metal surface. He felt hot breath on his ear.
"You know why you're here, bro."
Will pulled back as hard as he could. He pushed with his leg, tried to brace his foot against the bottom of the door.
Ling's grip was tight, but his voice implied effortlessness.
Tell Mandy that Evelyn's gone.
His voice got lower.
Tap, tap. Two in the head. Ding dong, Almeja is dead.
Ling released him. Will fell backward, his shoulders banging into the concrete wall. His heart was going like a metronome. He looked back at the cell door. There was a squeal of metal sliding across metal. The viewing panel closed, but not before Will saw Roger Ling's eyes. They were flat black, soulless. But there was something else there. A flash of triumph mixed in with bloodlust.
When? Will yelled. When did it happen?
Ling's voice was muffled behind the door.
Tell Mandy to wear something pretty to the funeral. I always did like her in black.
Will brushed himself off. As he walked up the corridor, he wondered which was worse. Feeling Roger Ling's hot breath on his neck, or having to tell Amanda and Faith that Evelyn Mitchell was dead. Chapter 14. Faith grabbed a grocery buggy from the line outside the store. She found an old list in her purse and clutched it in her hand as she walked into the building, pretending like this was just another day at the market. The Atlanta police had taken her Glock to process for ballistics, but they didn't know about Zeke's Walther P99 that he kept loaded in his glove compartment. The weight dragged on her purse strap as she hefted it over her shoulder. The German-made weapon was well-suited for her brother, who'd never seen combat. It was bulky and expensive, the sort of thing you'd carry for show. It could also drop a man at 100 yards, and at the end of the day, that was all Faith needed it for. She started out in the produce section, taking more time than usual to test the freshness of the oranges piled on display. She dropped a few into a plastic bag, then moved toward the bakery. She should have left the house hours ago, but she wanted to wait until she got the call from Zeke that Jeremy and Emma were safely ensconced in the visiting officer's quarters at Dobbin's Air Reserve Base. Just getting them all loaded into Jeremy's Impala had taken forever. Zeke had yelled at the car seat. Jeremy was still pouting about his confiscated iPhone. Emma hadn't cried because her big brother was there to soothe her. But Faith had bawled like a baby the minute their car had disappeared at the end of the street. Faith had assumed that the men who took her mother were as skilled as they were brazen. Tactically, they had always had the advantage, whether it was taking Evelyn or breaking into Faith's house. But with two cops sitting in her kitchen and her 6'4" brother stomping around like a bully spoiling for a fight, there was no way they would try the house again. They had gone for Jeremy, the weakest link, save for Emma. Faith felt her breath catch as she thought about her children. She had been so worried about her mother that she'd let the rest of her family slip. That wasn't going to happen again. She was going to keep all of them safe, or die trying. Faith felt a presence over her shoulder. Someone was watching her. She'd felt eyes on her from the moment she left the house. Casually, Faith turned around. She saw a kid in a Frito-Lay uniform stacking bags onto the shelves. He smiled at her. Faith smiled back, then pushed her cart down the aisle. When Faith was a little girl, the Charles Chip Man would come every Monday to fill their brown metal tins with potato chips. Tuesdays and Thursdays, the Mathis dairy truck idled in front of their house while Petro, the driver, put fresh milk in the metal rack by the door in the carport. A half gallon was 92 cents. Orange juice was 52 cents. Buttermilk, her father's favorite, was 47 cents. If Faith was good, her mother would let her count out the change to pay Petro. Sometimes, Evelyn would get chocolate milk. 56 cents for special occasions. Birthdays, good report cards, winning games, dance recitals. Cosmetics, vitamins, shampoo, greeting cards, books, soap. Faith kept piling things into her buggy, willing whoever was there to make contact.
She slowed her pace. The cart was nearly full. She checked Jeremy's iPhone. There were no new messages on his Facebook wall. No emails from Goodnight 92. Faith backtracked through the store, returning the shampoo and the vitamins, perusing the magazines again. She looked at her watch. She'd been here almost an hour and no one had approached her. Ginger would probably start wondering what was taking her so long. The young detective hadn't seemed fazed when she told him that she was going to the grocery store by herself. He was still licking his wounds over Faith taking his gun. She wasn't sure how much farther she could push him without getting a hard shove back. She angled her buggy around an old man who had stopped in the middle of the cereal aisle. Faith knew that they wanted her in the parking lot. They wanted her alone. She should just give in and get it over with. She put her hand on her purse, ready to take it out of the buggy. Logic intervened. They couldn't abduct her in the middle of the grocery store. They might try, but Faith wouldn't go anywhere. They would either have to bargain with her or shoot her. She wasn't leaving this store without a deal that would get her mother back. Faith stopped outside the restroom and left her buggy by the door. This was her third trip to the toilet since she'd gotten to the grocery store. She wasn't just trying to draw them out. One of the many benefits of her diabetes acting up was that her bladder felt constantly full. She pushed open the ladies' room door and held her breath at the stench. Grime covered the stainless steel walls and tile floor. The air felt greasy. Given a choice, she would have waited until she got home, but Faith didn't have that luxury. She checked all four stalls, then went into the handicap space because it was still the least filthy. Her thighs ached as she hovered over the seat. It was a balancing act. She had to keep her purse tucked to her stomach because there was nowhere to hang it, and she was afraid the fake leather would become glued to the floor. The door opened. Faith looked under the stall. She saw a pair of women's shoes, short heels, fat ankles stuffed into brown support hose. The faucet turned on, the hand towel dispenser cranked. The faucet turned off, the door opened again, then slowly closed. Faith closed her eyes and mumbled a prayer of relief. She finished going to the bathroom, flushed the toilet, then hiked her purse back onto her shoulder. The stall door didn't exactly lock. The thumb latch was missing. She had to stick her pinky into the square opening and twist the metal spindle to get the door open. Hola. Instantly, Faith cataloged everything she could about the man standing in front of her. Medium build, a few inches taller than Faith, around 180 pounds. Brown skin, dark hair, blue eyes bandied around his left index finger, tattoo of a snake on the right side of his neck. Faded blue jeans with holes at the knees, black warm-up jacket with a bulge at the front that could only be a gun. The brim of his black baseball cap was pulled low. She could still see his face. The smattering of facial hair, the mole on his cheek. He was about Jeremy's age, but as far from her docile, loving son as could be. Hate seemed to radiate off him. Faith knew his type, had dealt with it many times before. Hair trigger finger. Full of spite. Too young to be smart, too stupid to grow old. Faith put her hand in her purse. He pressed the bulge under his jacket. Wouldn't do that if I was you. Faith could feel the cold steel of the Walther. The muzzle was pointing toward the man. Her finger was close to the trigger. She could shoot the gun through her purse before he even thought to lift his jacket. Where's my mother? My mother, he repeated. You say that like she only belongs to you. Leave my family out of this. You ain't the one in the driver's seat here. I need to know that she's alive. He tilted up his chin and clicked his tongue once against the back of his teeth. The gesture was familiar, the same response Faith had gotten from just about every thug she'd ever arrested. She's safe. How do I know that? He laughed. You don't, bitch. You don't know nothing.
What do you want?
He rubbed his fingers against his thumb.
Money.
Faith didn't know if she could pull the bluff again.
Just tell me where she is and we'll end this. No one has to get hurt.
He laughed again.
Yo, you think I'm that stupid?
How much do you want?
All of it.
A stream of curses came to mind.
She never took any money.
She done spun me out this story, bitch. We passed that. Gimme the fucking money, and I'll give you what's left of her.
Is she alive?
Not for long, you don't do what I say.
Faith felt a bead of sweat roll down her back. I can have the money tomorrow, by noon.
What? You waiting for the bank to open?
Safe deposit box. She was making this up as she went along. Boxes. There are three of them all over the city. I need time. He smiled. One of his teeth was capped in a silver-colored metal. Platinum. Probably worth more money than Faith had in her checking account.
I knew you'd deal. I told Mommy that little baby girl wouldn't throw her over.
I need to know she's alive. None of this happens unless I know for sure that she's okay.
Well, I wouldn't say she's okay, but the bitch is still breathing last time I checked.
He took an iPhone out of his pocket, a newer model than she could afford for Jeremy. He held his tongue between his teeth as his thumbs worked across the screen. He found what he was looking for and showed Faith the phone. The screen showed the image of her mother holding a newspaper. Faith stared at the photo. Her mother's face was swollen, barely recognizable. Her hand had a bloody rag wrapped around it. Faith pressed her lips together. Bile stung the back of her throat. She fought against the tears stinging her eyes.
I can't tell what she's holding.
He used his fingers to enlarge the image.
It's a newspaper.
I know it's a USA Today, she snapped. That doesn't prove she's alive right now. It just proves that sometime after the papers were delivered this morning, you made her hold one up.
He looked at the screen. She could tell he was worried. He bit his bottom lip the same way Jeremy did when she'd caught him doing something wrong.
The man said, "This is proof of life. You need to deal with me if you want to keep it that way."
Faith noticed that his grammar had improved. His voice had gone up an octave, too. There was something familiar about his tone, but she couldn't place it. She just needed to keep him talking.
"You think I'm stupid?" she demanded. "This doesn't prove anything. My mother could already be dead. I'm not going to just hand you a pile of money because you have some stupid picture. You could have photoshopped that. I don't even know if it's really her."
He stepped closer, puffing out his chest. His eyes were almond-shaped, deep blue with speckles of green. Again, she had the sensation of knowing him. "I've arrested you before."
"Shit," he snorted. "You don't know me, bitch. You don't know a goddamn thing about me."
"I need proof that my mother's alive."
"She won't be for long if you keep this shit up."
Faith felt that familiar snap inside of her. All the anger and frustration of the last few days came rushing out.
"Have you ever even done this before? Are you some kind of amateur? You don't show up like this without real proof. I've been a fucking cop for 16 years. You think I'm gonna buy this cheap trick?"
She pushed him back hard enough to let him know she meant it.
"I'm leaving."
He slammed her face into the door. Faith was stunned by the blow. He jerked her around, his left arm pressed into her throat. His right hand gripped her face, fingers pressing into her skull. Spit flew from his mouth.
"You want me to leave another present under your pillow? Maybe her eyes?"
He pressed his thumb harder against her eye socket.
"Maybe her tits?"
The door pushed against Faith's back. Someone was trying to get into the restroom.
"Excuse me," a woman said. "Hello? Is this open?"
The man stared at Faith, a hyena studying its prey. His hand shook from the effort of gripping her face. Her teeth cut into the inside of her cheek. Her nose started to bleed. He could break her skull if he wanted to.
"Tomorrow morning," he said, "I'll send you instructions."
He leaned in so close that Faith's eyes blurred on his features.
"You don't tell anybody about this. You don't tell your boss. You don't tell that freak you work with. You don't tell your brother or anyone else in your precious family. Nobody. You hear me?"
"Yes," she whispered. "Yes." Impossibly, his grip tightened.
"I won't kill you first," he warned her. "I'll cut off your eyelids. Are you listening to me?"
Faith nodded.
"I'll make you watch while I skin your son. Piece by piece, I'll cut away his flesh until all you see is his muscles and bones, and all you hear is him crying like the bitch little spoiled baby that he is. And then I'll go to work on your daughter. Her skin'll be easier, like wet paper peeling back. Do you understand me? You get what I'm saying?"
She nodded again.
"Don't push me, bitch. You have no idea how little I've got left to lose."
He let go of her as quickly as he'd grabbed her. Faith fell to the floor. She coughed, tasting blood in her throat. He kicked her out of the way so that he could open the door. She reached out to her purse. Her fingers felt the impression of the gun. She should get up. She had to get up.
"Ma'am," a woman said.
She peered around the door, looking down at Faith.
"Do you want me to call a doctor?"
"No," Faith whispered. She swallowed the blood in her mouth. The inside of her jaw was ripped open. More blood trickled from her nose.
"Are you sure? I could call."
"No," Faith repeated. There was no one to call. Chapter 15. Will pulled into his driveway and waited for the garage door to open. All the lights were off in his house. Betty was probably floating on her full bladder, like a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. At least, he hoped she was. Will was in no mood to clean up a mess. He felt like he had killed Amanda. Not literally, not with his bare hands like he'd dreamed of doing for most of the day. Telling her what Roger Ling said, that Evelyn Mitchell was dead, was just as good as shooting her in the chest. She had deflated in front of him. All of her bravado was gone. All the arrogance and meanness and pettiness had rushed out of her, and the woman in front of him had been nothing but a shell. Will had had the sense to wait until they were outside the prison building to relay the news. She hadn't cried. Instead, to his horror, her knees had buckled. That was when he put his arm around her. She was surprisingly bony. Her hip was sharp under his hand. Her shoulders were frail. She seemed 10, 20 years older by the time he fastened her seatbelt around her lap and closed the car door. The trip back had been excruciating. Will's silence on the way down paled in comparison. He had offered to pull over, but she'd told him not to stop. Just outside of Atlanta, he'd seen her hand grip the door. Will had never been to her house before. She lived in a condo in the middle of Buckhead. It was a gated community. The buildings were all regal-looking with keyed corners and large, heavily trimmed windows. She had directed him to a unit in the back. Will had idled the car, but she didn't get out. He was debating whether or not to help her again when she said, "Don't tell Faith." He'd stared at her front door. She had a flag hanging from the front post. Spring flowers, a seasonal motif. Amanda had never struck him as a flag person. He couldn't imagine her standing on the porch in her heels and suit, leaning on tippy-toe to clip the appropriate flag onto the pole.
"We have to verify this," she'd said, though what Roger Ling had told Will was merely a confirmation of a truth Will realized he had been sensing for most of the day. Amanda must have known it, too. That was the only explanation for her earlier capitulation inside the prison waiting room. She had admitted that Evelyn was tainted because she'd known there was no reason to protect her anymore. The 24-hour mark had come and gone. There had been no contact from the kidnappers. There was blood all over Evelyn's kitchen floor. A lot of it. Maybe most of it from Evelyn. The young men they were dealing with had proven themselves to be remorseless killers, nothing more than assassins, even when it was against members of their own crew. The odds that Evelyn Mitchell had even made it through the night were close to nil. Will had told her, "Faith has to know." "I'll tell her when I know for sure." Her voice sounded flat, lifeless. "We meet at 7 tomorrow morning, the whole team. If you're a minute late, then don't bother coming." "I'll be there." "We are going to find her. I have to see her with my own eyes." "Okay. And if what Roger said is true, we'll find the boys who did this, and we'll rain down hell on them. Every last one, we will hound them into the ground." "Yes, ma'am." Her voice was so low and tired, he could barely hear her. "I will not rest until every single one of them is put to death. I want to watch them slip the needle in and see their feet twitch and their eyes roll and their chests freeze. And if the state won't kill them, then I'll do it myself." Amanda had pushed open the door and gotten out of the car. Will could see the effort it took her to keep her back straight as she walked up the stairs. If it were up to Amanda, if there was a way for her to will her friend to be alive, then there would be no question of Evelyn's survival. But that just wasn't the case. The garage door finally finished opening. Will pulled in and pressed the button to close the door. The garage had not been an original part of the house. Will had added on the structure in the neighborhood's more transitional days, back when junkies knocked on his door wondering if this was still a crack den. The entrance was awkward and led into the spare bedroom. Betty raised her head from the pillow when she saw Will. There was a puddle in the corner that neither one of them was ready to talk about. Will turned on the lights as he walked through the house. There was a chill in the air. He cracked open the kitchen door so Betty could go outside. She hesitated. "It's all right," he told her, using as soothing a tone as he could muster. Her injuries were healing, but the dog still remembered last week when a hawk had swooped into the yard and tried to pick her up. And Will could still remember the groomer's uncontrollable laughter when he'd told the man that a hawk had mistaken his dog for a rat. Betty finally went outside, but not without a wary glance over her shoulder. Will put his car key on the hook and placed his wallet and gun on the kitchen table. The pizza from yesterday was still in the refrigerator. Will took out the box but couldn't do anything more than stare at the gelatinous slices. He wanted to call Sarah, but this time his motivations were purely selfish. He wanted to tell her what had happened today. He wanted to ask her if it was right to wait to tell Faith that her mother was dead. He wanted to describe to her the way it felt to see Amanda brought so low, that it scared him to see her fallen so far from her pedestal. Instead, he returned the pizza box to the fridge, made sure the back door was still cracked open, and went to take a shower. It was almost midnight. He'd been up since 5 this morning, having slept only a few hours the night before. Will stood under the stream of hot water, trying to wash away his day. The grime of Valdosta State Prison,
the warehouse where he'd been shot at. Grady, where he'd felt dizzy with fear. Coastal, where he'd sweated so much that rings were still under the arms of his shirt. Will thought about Betty while he dried his hair. She'd been stuck in the house all day. The puddle was a responsibility they both shared. As late as it was, he couldn't see himself sleeping. He should take her for a walk. They could both do with stretching their legs. He pulled on a pair of jeans and a dress shirt that was too worn to wear to work anymore. The collar was frayed. One of the buttons was broken, dangling by a thread. He walked into the kitchen to get Betty's leash. Angie was sitting at the table. "Welcome home, baby. How was your day?" Will would have rather driven to Coastal and faced Roger Ling again than have to talk to his wife right now. She stood. Her arms went around his shoulders. She put her mouth close to his. "Aren't you going to tell me hello?" Her hands stroking his neck felt nothing like Sarah's. "Stop." She pulled away, feigning a pout. "Is that any kind of welcome for your wife? Where have you been? Since when do you care?" He thought about it. She had posed a legitimate question. "I don't, really. I just..." The words came out easier than he thought. "I don't want you here." "Hmm." She tucked her chin down, crossed her arms. "Well, I suppose this was inevitable. I can't leave you alone after all." She had closed the back door. He opened it. Betty ran in. She saw Angie and growled. Angie said, "Looks like none of the women in your life are happy to see me." He felt the hair on the back of his neck go up. "What are you talking about?" "Sarah didn't tell you?" Angie paused, but he couldn't answer her. "It's Sarah, right?" "That's her name." She gave a breathy laugh. "I have to say, Will, but she's a little plain for you. I mean, she's all right up top, but she's got no ass to speak of, and she's almost taller than you are. I thought you liked your women more womanly." Will still couldn't talk. His blood had frozen in his veins. "She was here when I got home yesterday, lingering in the bedroom. Didn't she tell you?" Sarah hadn't told him. Why hadn't she told him? "She colors her hair. You know that, right? Those highlights aren't natural." "What did you?" "I'm just letting you know she's not the perfect little angel you think she is." Will forced the words out of his mouth. "What did you say to her?" "I asked her why she was fucking my husband." His heart stopped. This was the reason Sarah had been crying yesterday afternoon. This explained her initial coldness when he showed up at her house last night. Will's heart clenched like a vice was around it. "You are not allowed to talk to her ever again." "You're trying to protect her?" She laughed. "Jesus, Will. That's hilarious, considering I'm trying to protect you." "You don't. She's got a thing for cops. You know that, right?" She shook her head at his stupidity. "I looked into her husband. He was quite a catch. Fucked anything that moved."
"Like you?"
"Oh, come on. Try harder than that, baby."
"I don't want to try."
He finally said the words that he'd been thinking for the last year.
"I just want it over. I want you out of my life."
She laughed in his face.
"I am your life."
Will stared at her. She was smiling. Her eyes practically glowed. Why was it that she only ever seemed happy when she was trying to hurt him?
"I can't do this anymore."
"His name was Jeffrey.
Did you know that?"
Will didn't answer. Of course he knew Sarah's husband's name. He was smart. Went to college. A real one. Not some correspondence school where they charge extra to mail your diploma.
He ran a whole police department. They were so fucking in love that she looks cross-eyed in the pictures.
Angie grabbed her purse out of the chair. You want to see them? They were in the newspaper in that shithole town every other week. They did a fucking collage on the front page when he died.
Please just go.
Angie dropped her purse.
Does she know you're stupid?
He held his tongue between his front teeth.
Oh, of course she does.
She almost sounded relieved.
That explains it. She feels sorry for you. Poor little Willie can't read.
He shook his head. Let me tell you something, Wilbur. You're not a great catch. You're not handsome. You're not smart. You're not even average. And you're sure as hell not good in the sack.
She had said this so many times before that the words no longer had meaning.
Is there a point to this?
I'm trying to keep you from getting hurt.
That's the point.
He looked down at the floor.
Don't do this, Angie. Just this one time, don't do it.
Do what?
Tell you the truth.
Because you've obviously got your head so far up your ass that you can't see what's going on here.
She put her face inches from his.
Don't you know that every time she kisses you, every time she touches you, or fucks you, or holds you, she's thinking about him?
She paused, as if she expected an answer.
You're just a replacement, Will.
You're just there until somebody better comes along. Another doctor. A lawyer. Someone who can read a newspaper without his lips getting tired.
Will felt his throat tighten. You don't know anything.
I know people. I know women. I know them a hell of a lot better than you.
I'm sure you do.
Damn right I do. And I know you best of all.
She paused to survey the damage. Obviously, it wasn't enough.
You're forgetting I was there, baby. Every visiting day, every adoption rally, there you were standing in front of that mirror, combing your hair, checking your clothes, primping yourself up so that some mommy and daddy might see you and take you home with them.
She started shaking her head.
But they never did they?
No one ever took you home. No one ever wanted you. And you know why?
He couldn't breathe in. His lungs started to ache.
Because there's something about you, Will.
Something wrong. Something off. It makes people's skin crawl. It makes them want to get as far away from you as they can.
Just stop, all right? Stop it.
Stop what? Pointing out the obvious? What do you see happening with her? You're gonna get married and have babies and live some kind of normal life?
She laughed, as if this was the most ludicrous thing she'd ever heard.
You ever consider the fact that you like what we have?
He tasted blood on the tip of his tongue. He imagined a wall between them. A thick, concrete wall.
There's a reason you wait for me. There's a reason you don't go on dates, and you don't go to bars or pay for pussy like every other man in the world.
The wall got higher, stronger.
You like what we have. You know you can't be with somebody else, not really be with them. You can't walk out on that ledge. You can't open yourself up to someone like that because you know, at the end of the day, they will always leave you. And that's what your precious Sarah is going to do, baby. She's an adult. She's been married before. She had a real life with somebody else. Someone who was worthy of being loved and knew how to love her back.
and she's gonna see real fast that you're not capable of that. And then, she's gonna drop you on your ass and be gone. The taste of blood got stronger in his mouth.
You're just so fucking desperate for somebody to give you a little attention.
You've always been that way. Clingy, pathetic, needy. He couldn't stand her being this close to him. He walked over to the sink and filled a glass with water. You don't know anything about me. Have you told her what happened to you? She's a doctor. She knows what a cigarette burn looks like. She knows what happens when somebody holds two live wires to your skin. Will drank the water in one gulp. Look at me. He didn't look up, but she kept talking anyway. You're a project for her. She feels sorry for you, poor little orphan Will. You're Helen Keller, and she's whoever the fuck that bitch is who taught her how to read. She grabbed his chin and made him face her. Will still looked away. She just wants to cure you, and when she gets tired of trying to fix you, when she realizes that there's no magic pill that'll take away the stupid, she's going to drop you back into the trash where she found you. Something broke inside of him. His resolve, his strength, his flimsy walls. And then what? He yelled. I'll come crawling back to you? You always do. I'd rather be alone. I'd rather rot alone in a hole than be stuck with you. She turned her back to him. Will put the glass in the sink, used the back of his hand to wipe his mouth. Angie didn't cry much. At least, not for real. Every kid Will grew up with had a different survival tactic. Boys used their fists. Girls turned bulimic. Some, like Angie, used sex, and when sex didn't work, they used tears. And then, when tears didn't work, they found something else to cut into your heart. When Angie turned around, she had Will's gun in her mouth. No. She pulled the trigger. He closed his eyes, held up his hands to block his face from the pieces of brain and skull. But nothing happened. Slowly, Will dropped his arms, opened his eyes. The gun was still in her mouth. Dry fire. The echo of the hammer clicking was like a needle piercing his eardrum. He saw the magazine on the table. The bullet he kept in the chamber was beside it. Will's voice trembled. Don't you ever. Does she know about your father, Will? Have you told her what happened? His whole body was shaking. Don't ever do that again. She dropped the gun back on the table. Her hands cupped his face. You love me, Will. You know you love me. You felt it when I pulled that trigger. You know you can't live without me. Tears came into his eyes. We're not whole people unless we're together. She stroked his cheek, his eyebrow. Don't you know that? Don't you remember what you did for me, baby? You were willing to give up your life for me. You'd never do that for her. You'd never cut yourself for anybody but me. He pulled away from her grasp. The gun was still on the table. The magazine felt cold in his hand. He shoved it home. He pulled back the slide to chamber around. He held out the gun to her, muzzle pointing to his chest. Go ahead and shoot me. She didn't move. He tried to take her hand. Shoot me. Stop. She held up her hands. Stop it. Shoot me. He repeated. Either shoot me or let me go. She took the gun and dismantled it, throwing the pieces onto the counter. When her hands were free, she slapped him hard across the face, then again. Then her fists started to fly. Will grabbed her arms. She twisted around, turning her back to him. Angie hated being held down. He pressed his body into hers, forcing her against the sink. She fought furiously, screaming, scratching with her fingernails. Let me go! She kicked back at him, grinding her heel into his foot. Stop it! Will tightened his grip. She leaned into him, all the anger and frustration of the last 2 days pooled into one place. He could feel his body responding to her, yearning to release. She managed to turn back around. Her hand went behind his neck, pulling him closer. She put her lips to his. Her mouth opened. Will stepped back. She moved to put her arms around him, but he took another step away. He was breathing too hard to speak. This was their dance. Anger, fear, violence. Never compassion. Never kindness. He took Betty's leash off the hook. The dog pranced at his feet. Will's hands were shaking so badly he could barely clip the leash to her collar. He took his keys off the hook and tucked his wallet into his back pocket. I don't want you here when I get back. You can't leave me. He reassembled the gun and clipped the paddle holster to his jeans. I need you. He turned around to face Angie. Her hair was wild. She looked desperate, ready to do anything. He was so tired of this. So tired. Don't you understand? I don't want to be needed. I want to be wanted. She didn't have a good answer to that, so she went with a threat. I swear I'll kill myself if you walk out that door. Will left the room. She followed him down the hallway. I'll take pills. I'll slit my wrists. That's one of your favorites, isn't it? I'll slit my wrists and you'll come home and find me. How's that gonna make you feel, Wilbur? How are you gonna feel if you come home from fucking your precious little doctor and I'm dead in the bathroom? He picked up Betty from the floor. Annie Sullivan. What? That's the woman who taught Helen Keller. Will went into the garage and closed the door behind him. The last thing he saw was Angie standing in the hallway, fists clenched in front of her. He got into his car. He waited for the garage door to open. He backed the car into the driveway and waited for the door to close. Betty settled down into the seat beside him as he drove away. He cracked the window so she could enjoy the night air. Will didn't think about where he was going until he pulled into the parking lot in front of Sarah's building. He grabbed the dog and carried her to the front entrance. Sarah was on the top floor. He pressed the buzzer. He didn't have to say anything. There was a responding buzz, and the lock clicked open. Betty squirmed as they got into the elevator. He put her down at his feet. When they reached the top floor, she ran out into the hall. Sarah's door was open. She was standing in the middle of the room. Her hair was loose and down around her shoulders. She was wearing jeans and a thin white t-shirt that didn't do much to conceal what was underneath. Will closed the door. There were so many things he wanted to tell her, but when he finally managed to speak, none of it came out. Why didn't you tell me you saw Angie? She didn't answer. She just stood there looking at him. Will couldn't stop himself from looking back. Her shirt was tight. He could see the swell of her breasts, her nipples pressing into the thin material. He said, I'm sorry. His voice broke. He would never forgive himself for bringing Angie into Sarah's life. It was the most awful thing he had ever done to anyone. What she said to you, I never wanted. Sarah walked toward him. I'm so sorry. She took his hand and turned it so that the palm was facing up. Her fingers moved nimbly over the buttons on his sleeve. Will wanted to pull away. He needed to pull away. But he couldn't move. He couldn't make his muscles work. He couldn't stop her hands or her fingers or her mouth. She pressed her lips to his bare wrist. It was the gentlest kiss he had ever known. Her tongue flicked lightly along the skin, tracing the scar up his arm. Will felt like a current was going through his body, so that by the time she kissed his mouth, he was already on fire. Her body curved into his. The kiss deepened.
her hand wrapped around the back of his head, nails scraping through his hair. Will was dizzy. He was in free fall. He couldn't stop touching her, her narrow hips, the curve at the small of her back, her perfect breasts. His breath caught when her hand slipped inside his shirt. Her fingers brushed over his chest, down his belly. She didn't flinch. She didn't falter. Instead, she put her forehead to his, looked him in the eye, and told him, "Breathe." Will let out a breath he felt like he'd been holding his entire life. Monday. Chapter 16. Sarah woke to hear the shower running. She turned over in bed. Her hand traced along the indentation left in the pillow. The sheets were twisted around her body. Her hair was a mess. She could still smell Will in the room, taste him in her mouth, remember what his arms felt like when they'd wrapped around her. She could not recall the last time good reasons had made her not want to get out of bed in the morning. Obviously, it had happened when Jeffrey was alive, but for the first time in 4.5 years, Jeffrey was the last thing on Sarah's mind. She wasn't making comparisons. She wasn't weighing differences. Her worst fear had always been that her husband's ghost would follow her into the bedroom. But that hadn't been the case. There was only Will, and the absolute joy she felt when she was with him. Sarah had a vague recollection that her clothes were somewhere between the kitchen and the dining room. She pulled a black silk robe out of the closet and made her way down the hall. The dogs gave her a lazy look from the couch as she walked into the living room. Betty was sleeping on a pillow. Billy and Bob were piled into a crescent shape around her. Will had to be at work in an hour, or Sarah would have joined him in the shower. Yesterday she had told the hospital staff that she didn't need time off after her ordeal. But this morning, she was glad they had insisted. She needed to process what had happened, and she wanted to be home when Will got off work. Her clothes were neatly folded on the counter. Sarah smiled, thinking she'd at last found a good use for her dining room table. She turned on the coffee maker. There was a yellow post-it note on the wall above the dog bowls. Will had drawn a smiley face in the center. She saw another note with the same graphic above the leashes. There was something to be said for a man who fed and walked the dogs while Sarah was sleeping. She stared at the blue ink, the arc of a smile and two dots for eyes. Sarah had never pursued a man before. She had always been on the receiving end of the wooing. But she'd realized last night that nothing would ever happen if she didn't make the first move. And she had wanted something to happen. She had wanted Will more than anything she'd wanted in a long while. He'd been tentative at first. He was obviously self-conscious about his body, which was laughable, considering how beautiful it was. His legs were strong and lean. His shoulders were roped with muscle. His abs would be perfectly at home on an underwear billboard in the middle of Times Square. It wasn't just that, though. His hands knew exactly where to touch her. His mouth felt wonderful. His tongue felt wonderful. Everything about him was wonderful. Being with him felt like a key sliding into a lock.